Welcome to Sticky Cues. I'm Adie.
And I'm Tom.
We answer anonymous questions written on sticky notes from our real-life consent education classes.
We'll talk about sex, relationships, consent, and help you to tackle those sticky questions from the young people in your life. So, Adie, what's been on your mind this week?
This week, I've been thinking a lot about octopus. I went snorkeling and we saw an octopus and it was super cool. And I read a book on them not so long ago about how their intelligence is really advanced but different to ours because we split on the evolutionary tree ages ago.
That seems fascinating.
Yeah. They're basically aliens.
Every time I look at an octopus, I think it knows. An octopus looks at me like a human being would look back at me.
Totally.
It's fully aware that it's being watched by another sentient creature.
I had that experience.
Oh, really? Yeah, that's full on.
You ready for a question?
I'm ready for a question. What are we discussing today?
If you're in a toxic relationship and they tell you they will do something to themselves, how do you get out of that relationship?
Wow, that would be a terrifying situation to find yourself in. Someone that either you're emotionally attached to or were previously is now threatening self-harm or some kind of consequences if you break up with them. Straight off the bat, that is manipulation and that's not okay.
Intended or otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, to go straight down the line, you are not obligated to stay with that person just because they have made that threat. In fact, I would argue that if your partner is saying, unless you stay with me, I'm going to do something to myself, that is a great reason to probably not be with them. Maybe not a great reason. That's probably not how I should say it, but that would be further conviction for me that this is not a relationship I want to be in.
Because so how do you get out of that relationship?
My first response would be speaking to someone that is trusted, that knows the partner. It might be friends or family of the partner saying, look, this is happening. You know, this is being threatened when I say that I need to leave this relationship. I am, if you are genuinely worried, saying I am worried about their health and well-being. I can't be expected to handle this. This isn't my responsibility. But I'm giving my partner's community a heads up that there might be some, you know, disrupted.
I don't love that answer, I've got to be honest.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, I'm keen to hear more about this. We'll jump into the deep dive in a moment. But just to wrap it up, I would say that if you are going to separate or break up with this partner, make sure that when you go to do it, that you're in a safe place, you're in an environment that you can trust and feel okay in. Keep it to the point, keep it short, be honest and open. And then make sure that afterwards you've got those support people and activities to help look after yourself and make sure that you're okay, because it's going to be a disrupted time.
Can I just ask you to expand a tiny bit on what you mean by make sure you're in a safe place? Like, what does a safe place look like?
For sure. So if you're about to break up with a partner who has threatened to hurt themselves afterwards, going to their house and doing it in their home might make you feel a bit uncomfortable because you're kind of in their space of control or power, if you will. So you might choose to do it at a park, like a public place that's kind of open and it's a relaxing environment. If you don't feel safe meeting them in person, even though it's a bit rough, it might be a phone call. Or if you're really not okay with it, you might need to send a text. I know those are not always ideal. We've got feelings around those. But check in with yourself, figure out what environment or what way is going to make you feel safe to do it and feel like you can get the message across and go with that.
I think a simple key would also just to be make sure that they're not alone or they're not going to be alone for a period of time after you're planning to do that. And same for you, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So let's do this deep dive. Okay, so that was the short answer. Now we're deep diving into some of the bigger concepts.
I don't love that answer because it sounds like we're telling that person to go and talk to other people about someone else's problems.
Mm.
So my instinct would be to get them to seek support from a trusted adult, someone who has the power to keep them safe and enact some things without going to the whole community. Maybe that wasn't what you were saying, but it sounded like going to all the people around the person who's threatened harm and telling them all, which may have good intentions, but I think it's one of those situations where not everybody needs to get involved or have an opinion.
Yeah, I see your point. Was there more you wanted to say on that or?
Not especially. No.
Sure.
So, not at that point. Give me a second.
Yeah. I'll say some more and then you can retort that. I guess for me, it wouldn't make sense for me to go to my community, my support network and say, oh, my partner's threatening this. Can you help out? Because I don't think it's my community's responsibility to look after my partner.
Yeah.
If my partner had friends, family that are close to them that have, you know, committed relationships of sorts with my partner, the support for my partner, who I'm about to break up with, I would argue sits with their community.
Sure. I just don't think community is like, because for me, I'm hearing like 5-6 different people where it could just be a key person, you know?
I think that's probably what I was assuming, that it would just be one person, like you're not telling all of their friends and family. But it sounds like what you're saying is that a better option would be speaking to my partner and saying, you need to seek out professional help, like therapist, doctor, counselor, et cetera. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah, I think if that feels safe to do so.
Okay. So what if it doesn't? How do you approach a relationship where your partner's threatening to harm themselves if you leave when it doesn't feel safe to go to external professional support?
I think in any of these situations, and particularly we are talking about young people here. We're talking about someone who's 15, 16 maybe.
And this comes up enough times in schools for me to remember them.
Yeah, for sure. And it does feel like their fault, you know. It does feel like they are solely responsible. I've been in situations where I feel solely responsible for someone's emotional health and well-being because you're the closest person to them and it feels like a betrayal to go to anyone else. So it's really, really hard advice to take, and it takes a level of insight that I think a lot of people, let alone teenagers, would struggle with. But finding someone, and it may just be a professional for you who wants to get out of the relationship. So the school social worker or the school psychologist, and going, this is my situation, because context is so important in these conversations as well. Mm-hmm. And so the advice that we're giving this person is very generic. We don't know this person. We don't know the person we're with. We don't know how high that risk is that they will hurt themselves or someone else. Definitely have to take it super seriously. So someone personally close to you is going to give better advice and put better support networks in place, because we can talk very generally about putting supports in place. I mean, using inverted commas here, but that's going to be very situation dependent. That might look like an immediate intervention from a school social worker on this person, or it might look like a conversation with their parents, or it might look like keeping an eye on them at school, or making sure that, I don't know, like it could be anything. But ultimately, I think the key message here is that it's not your responsibility to stay in a relationship that is clearly not healthy if someone feels that they need to harm themselves to control someone else's behavior, because that's not okay.
And that's what this threat is. It's an attempt to control someone's behavior, to keep them in a relationship that they don't want to be in through the threat of, you know, self-harming. So it sounds like what you were saying is that for the person who's wanting to leave and is worried about their partner harming themselves, speaking to a trusted professional adult in their life, like, you know, if we're speaking to school students, school nurse, school psychologist, counselor, etc., so that someone in a professional role who's kind of paid to be in a caring type role is able to respond and step in.
Yeah. And if not one of those people, then a helpline or another adult that you trust.
Yep.
But remembering that adults are obligated to help young people, particularly in Australia, any adult who works with children is mandated to report any suspected abuse or neglect of a child. So if they suspect that someone is at risk of harm, even from themselves, they're mandated to report that. So that's what I mean by support networks, and acknowledging as well that that in itself can feel like a betrayal to a young person.
I wonder if that might be useful to speak to. If I was in that situation and my partner was threatening to self-harm, any kind of action I take is, like you said, going to feel like a betrayal. I'm going to feel like a bad person. I'm going to have conflicted feelings around any attraction or feelings that I had for them and this desire to leave and for be by myself. And if I do decide to leave, I'm probably going to spend a lot of time worrying about their well-being or concerned that there's going to be some kind of consequences. If a young person is listening to this, we acknowledge that there's probably going to be some really intense, confusing feelings. And at that point, also chatting to that trusted adult or a professional who can help you to manage and make sense of those feelings, because it's not like once you leave, everything kind of goes to normal and you're all fine. There's going to be some flow-on effects. Yeah, it's a process and it takes time.
I think you should acknowledge the support network that friendship groups have as well, because for the person who's trying to leave this relationship, it would be really good to surround yourself with friends who know what's going on for you and can support and sort of reinforce those things that it's not your obligation to stay with someone and that you do have other people around you that love you and care for you. And
I would still argue, if I was in that position, I would still be speaking to at least one person that was a friend or community of my soon-to-be ex-partner.
Yeah.
And letting them know that, look, we're in the conversation of breaking up. They have threatened self-harm. I am worried about them, but I'm not sticking around for this. I'm not going to, you know,
go with their threat. I don't think that's a bad idea, honestly.
So it sounds like we're agreeing that not telling everyone in that person's community.
Yeah.
But I believe that there would be value in just letting someone know that is
active support.
We
also assume there'd be crossover, right? If you've been dating someone, you're probably friends with their friends and you have enough of a relationship there to say, even if you're not telling them that you're going to break up with their friend straight away, but at least opening the conversation and saying, I'm worried about them, their mental health is not in a great place. I think teenagers are really great at talking about mental health these days. We go into schools. So much better than we were. We go into schools where they have well-being plans and they have brain breaks and they have meditation corners and they're all across it. And even the fact that they know about self-care and about mental health and they've being taught to prioritize that is just fantastic. And we talk a lot about having community around you and that definition of a relationship being subjective. And importantly, a romantic relationship shouldn't fulfill every category of need in your life. So we still need friends. We still need family. We still need all of these other different types of people around us, like mentors and role models and like all of these kinds of people in our life. And one person, our romantic partner, can never fit all of those roles.
Yeah.
So this is a great example of sort of rallying that support for both people, because the person who's threatening self-harm clearly is not in a good place. And the person who's wanting to leave the relationship is also going to need some support. So creating that support, telling the friend stuff's going on, and then surrounding yourself with people and support so that when you do have that very difficult conversation with the partner, hopefully everyone ends up okay.
I wonder if it might be worth talking about what it might look like for the person leaving the relationship, what that support might look like. I was thinking things like having someone that you might go exercising with, or if you're into gaming, having your friends that you do that with, setting up some times, knowing that you're probably going to be in a rough space, or, you know, if you've got access to mental health professionals, counselors, et cetera, booking in some sessions, or a trusted adult, someone whose opinion and worldview you really respect and really speaks to, organizing some catch-ups with them for a coffee or something to talk about it. It might be worth coming up with a list of things that you know make you feel good in your body and in your mind, and planning out some of those things for the days and weeks ahead.
Nice.
Yeah. Just to give it a practical lens.
Yeah. Do you have any experiences of mental health in your life that you want to share?
Well, it's funny and embarrassing. I have been on both sides of this question.
Interesting.
Yeah. Not to the extreme, but this is so embarrassing. But I remember it as an early to young teenager, say 13 to 15, being in a long distance relationship, and my partner at the time, girlfriend, it was obvious that she wanted out, and for good reason, I reckon.
poor past Tom.
No. He was a conflicted soul. And yeah, I remember using my mental health as a, and my sadness as a threat. Like, you know, if you leave me, I'm going to get so sad and depressed. It wasn't ever an explicit threat of if you leave, this will happen.
Doesn't have to be.
No, it was, and this is probably worthwhile talking about. The way that I did that was to constantly be going on about bad mental health. And it wasn't great, I'll admit that. But it was the only thing I ever talked about. It was the only thing I sought connection with my girlfriend at the time over, my mental health. And years later, she said to me, I knew that if I talked about breaking up with you, it would send you into this big spiral. There'll be all these messages about how sad you were and all of this.
And the implication is that it's her fault.
And that is the key thing. I made it seem, even though I never explicitly said it, I made it seem like it would have been her fault, that she was responsible for my sadness if she broke up with me. And that is not great. And I look back at that and think it would have been so much cleaner and easier for both of us to just have separated. I would have actually been fine.
Yeah.
I think there's also a deeper conversation here about knowing ourselves well enough to know what we're actually feeling.
And we don't, and we can't as teenagers. There's no way we're going to, this is part of the exploration. Like, unfortunately, you got to feel the feelings.
And that is.
And don't we hate that?
I am 32 and I still can't fully conceptualize of feeling the feelings. I'm still
working on it. I don't have a great lexicon for emotion yet. No. I'm like, I don't know. I'm just grumpy today. That's it. Just bleh.
And it's everyone else's fault.
Yeah. Or even like, I am happy. Do you want to expand on that? No, just feeling good. Duh, I guess. So I'm working on that. I'm trying to find some more words. I was going to offer an anecdote of my own, which is almost the flip side of that. I had a partner that I was having like, I don't know, I wasn't sure about the relationship. We were 3 months in. And so I sort of went there. And in hindsight, I think what I was trying to do is encourage them to break up with me so that I didn't have to do the breaking up. And so I just sort of voiced all of these half-assed concerns, and this person just sort of turned around and was like, well, this is what I want, and you know, you just need to sort out what you're feeling and decide what you want, and in the meantime I want to be with you, so I'll wait here until you figure it out, but I'm not going to hang around forever if that's not what you want, so sort yourself out, basically, and held me accountable to my own feelings. And that was a really new experience for me. And at the time I was like, wow, this is both thrillingly uncomfortable and empowering. And we're still together 13 years later.
That's a cool story.
Turns out I just had to feel my own feelings and own them.
I relate strongly to that. And I was about to kick off with another anecdote, but we can save that for another episode.
So Tom, in summary, do you think this is a green, an amber, or a red flag question?
This would sit between green and amber for me. Maybe a little bit more on the amber side, because it feels like a question that comes from someone's current experience. That's what my brain assumes. And it may not be. It might have been something in the past they might be asking because of friends in that situation, or they're getting into a relationship and they're worried that might be the case. But my brain assumes that someone, the person who asked this, is in this situation. And that makes me feel for them. I feel for the confusion and the fear and the worry and all the tension that comes with being in that situation. And if I was answering this question in front of a classroom, I'd probably start by saying, this is a really intense situation. If this is your situation, I feel for you. Please seek support, school counselors, social workers, et cetera. Then go into seek your support, make sure that you're looked after. I would probably still say, if you want to and feel comfortable, mention it to one of their friends that this is what's happening, so that you kind of ticked that box off in a sense. And then actively going, build in your well-being activities, your gaming, you're going for walks, you're catching up with friends, you're doing artwork, you're doing sport, whatever it is for you.
Nice.
Actively build those things out in the weeks to come, and, you know, have your supportive people around. Yeah, and I'd probably be looking at the students to see if anybody was like reacting particularly to the answer, and if I could see that someone was maybe a little bit disrupted or dysregulated, I might check in with them afterwards or just let a teacher know. To make sure that they're okay.
Yeah.
What about your thoughts? thoughts.
I agree. I think this is an amber. I think this is coming. It's quite a specific question. So I think this is coming from, as you say, someone's experience or something they've observed. So I think it would be a good idea for the community around this person to just be aware that some extra support might be needed.
I know that we've kind of gone to wrap this up, but it brings back the topic of consent in my mind in that if I'm going into a relationship, there's probably agreed upon standards of what that looks like. It might be monogamous. It might not be. We might be calling each other boyfriend, girlfriend. We might not be. There's all these different agreements, whether they're spoken or unspoken, that are part of the relationship. And being told you can't leave or I'm going to hurt myself, that is not consent. You're not there because you actually want to be there.
Yeah.
You're there because of a threat.
Yeah.
And we know that consent needs to be freely given.
Mm.
And consent applies to a relationship as well. If I'm in that relationship, it's because I want to be, because it feels good. It's wonderful. I really like the person and I see a future that I'd like to be a part of. If I don't want to be in that relationship, but there's this threat there that's keeping me in it, that's not consenting.
Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, please pass it on. Consent education is best when it's open and often. This podcast can be a great jumping off point. It really helps if you give us a rating, leave a review and subscribe. To see more questions that we've answered, you can follow us on Instagram at @sticky_QS.
Sticky Qs is hosted and produced by Tom Duff and Adi Delaney. Further support from the Tasmanian Sexual Assault Support Service. Editing, sound design and original composition by Gareth Dawson. Graphic design by Fatago.